Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Chris Colby, author of the Homebrew Recipe Bible, Methods of Modern Home Brewing, and How to Brew Seltzer, joins me to taste my hoppy raw ale and to formulate a Kolsch recipe for Steve Wilkes to brew. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and many thanks to everybody who was helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. And many thanks to the new Patreon subscribers who are signing up every week. Your help is very much appreciated. Financial supporters will see an early release this week of the video where Steve Wilkes and I taste the hoppy raw ale. No big surprise, we both liked it. Financial supporters will also get the recipe and a behind-the-scenes video of how the brew day went without boiling the whole wort, including how I boiled just a portion of the wort from early in the mash to make a hop tea for bittering. And you'll get to see how weird the Kroizen looked on top of the beer when I opened up the fermenter and dry hopped. Or at least it looked weird to me. That was a fun brew to do. I forgot to talk about this last week. The pastime Matt Giovannisi of Brew Cabin and I got together. We wondered about why he should have to pressurize his kegs at a higher level since he's living at a higher altitude. I couldn't understand why the gauge reading, say, 12 PSI at his house should carbonate the beer differently from when my gauge reads 12 PSI at my house. Well, we got some help from listeners, as I suspected we would. Listener Ronnie on Facebook was first to comment. Ronnie said, regarding the issue about keg carbonation at high altitude, I'd like to point out that the pressure regulator measures the pressure relative to the ambient pressure. So when the ambient pressure is lower due to altitude, the total pressure will be lower at a given setting. Conversely, to get a good or given total pressure, which is what controls the carbonation level, you would need to set your regulator at a higher pressure if you're at a higher altitude. Chris from Minneapolis sent an email. Chris says, just listen to the Whirlpool episode. I assume someone answered your question. Yeah. However, the quick explanation for the need to increase CO2 pressure at altitude is that the pressure gauge measures gauge pressure, not absolute. Gauge pressure is the difference between the inside of the keg and the outside. The volume of CO2 is based on the absolute pressure, which is the gauge plus ambient pressure. For example, 12 psi gauge at sea level is 26.7 psi. That's 12 plus 14.7. 14.7 is atmospheric pressure at sea level. Denver ambient pressure is about 12.5 psi, so 12 psi gauge would be 24.5 psi absolute. So for Matt to get 26.7, he needs to add just over 2 psi compared to sea level. Pressure gauges that measure absolute pressure are more expensive. Plus, gauge pressures are more important for safety because the strength of the keg is based on pressure differential rather than absolute. That makes sense. And listener Bill wrote in with the pithiest response. Bill said, check out the difference between gauge pressure and absolute pressure. So, excellent. Thanks, y'all. That makes perfect sense. I knew that we could depend on you for information, for good information. I appreciate your taking time to write in. You can also depend on yeast from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Yeast. See what it did there? With 200 billion cells in each easy-to-open package of Imperial yeast. My stir plate is dusty because I don't use it anymore to make starters for moderate-gravity 5-gallon batches. Back in the day, some of you may remember, it was pretty much a given that if I used liquid yeast, I'd feel like I'd had to make a starter or face lag times of around 24 hours or so. Well, not anymore. My airlocks are usually bubbling before bedtime without a starter. And with this hoppy raw ale, the seasonal Kvike yeast A37 Pog was bubbling by supper time, just a couple hours after I pitched. I pitched it at 90 degrees Fahrenheit, or 32 C, and then moved the wort inside into the guest bath. But Pog was very happy. I get some nice lemony character that I think is coming from the Pog. And I'm looking forward to tasting what I get from fermenting at higher temps on the hot porch. Ask your local homebrew store about A37 Pog from Imperial Yeast and check out all the dependable deliciousness at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com. Okay, everybody, buckle up. Let's talk to Chris. Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure. I'm really excited about this one because we're going to the second part, the formulating the recipe part, I don't think is going to be very challenging. But I'm excited to have you taste the beer that I sent you, the beer that we formulated last time based on Mika Leitinen's suggestions in the conversation that I had with him on brewing a hoppy raw ale. So it's something a little different, and, you know, it's a little unconventional as far as, you know, quote-unquote modern brewing techniques are concerned, but I'd be interested to get your take. Have you had a raw beer before?
This will be my first.
Ooh-hoo. I'll take a little cheater sip there while before I read the recipe. So here's the recipe. This is a 5-gallon or 19-liter batch. It was 12 pounds or 5.4 kilograms of Vienna malt, and that's it. This is a smash beer. So what I did was I mashed in or doughed in to get a temperature of 148 degrees Fahrenheit or 64.4 C. So into 7 gallons or 26.5 liters of water at 158 degrees Fahrenheit or 70 C, I doughed in, stirred around, and achieved my initial rest temperature of 148 degrees Fahrenheit or 64.4 C. And I turned on the recirculating pump this time on my my Warthog system and was able to maintain that temperature for 2 hours. Now, based on your suggestion, Mika Leitinen suggested boiling hops in just plain water. What I did, based on your suggestion, was I waited for the mash to recirculate for about 20 minutes, and then I stuck a 2-quart pan under the spigot in the lid of the mash tun and collected, you know, about a quart and a half or maybe 2 quarts of wort, and fairly weak wort at that point. But just to kind of give it a little buffer for the hops. And then I brought that into the kitchen, and in that, for 1 hour, I boiled 2 ounces or 56 grams of Cascade at 6.1% alpha acid. And then I added that hop tea back on top of the mash of the grain to be sprayed upon by the recirculating wort, and then let that 2 hour rest complete. And then I raised the temperature of the mash to 170 degrees Fahrenheit or 77 C. And once it got that temperature, I held it there for 10 minutes for a mash out. Then I collected my wort into a bucket. And then into that bucket with the hot wort, I did a 10-minute hop stand with another 2 ounces or 56 grams of Cascade. I chilled it with an immersion chiller down to 90 degrees Fahrenheit or 32 C. And into that, I pitched Imperial A37 Pog, which is a Kveik yeast strain. And boy, it was fermenting. The airlock was moving in like 2 hours. It was just it was very happy. So I brewed it on, let's see, the 22nd, or no, the 16th. I dry hopped it on the 20th, so 4 days later. And then 2 days later after that, I kegged. So that's 6 days after pitching the yeast, I kegged. So original gravity 1048, final gravity 1012 for an ABV of 4.7% or 164 calories per 12-ounce serving. So that's the beer. No boiling. But as we discussed on the previous show, you know, it was pasteurized by the temperature of the mash. We did the isomerization of the hops with the little hop tea, We didn't concentrate the wort, so you know the first running or the is what you get with this. So that's it. Came out to 1048. But I guess the proof of the pudding is in the tasting, as they properly say. So what do you think of the beer?
This is not for me.
What?
It, like, I don't know. There's the aroma and the flavor. Like, given, I remember what he said about what flavors it enhanced. And I mean, I think that you got those flavors out of the beer, but I just, that's just not for me.
What are you tasting? Because maybe it's the bottle. Maybe I screwed up on the bottling. Because what I get is a citrusy from the Cascade. I also get lemon, probably from the Pog. But then there's also a nice grain, multi-grainy background.
I think that's what's getting me. I think it's very reminiscent of sort of raw grain, which, I mean, I like as, you know, for cereal or whatever. But yeah, there's something about this that's, I don't know.
Huh? I wonder if it's that bottle. Or
I can try another one later. But.
Yeah. Well, that's disconcerting. Steve and I, Steve is the second one of these beers that, you know, on the audio show, it didn't go over. But Steve and I on the video podcast, fresh out of the keg, we like it. We liked it. I don't know.
Okay.
I
mean, I think this is more of a, like I said, I remember what he said. The technique did, and I think it did all that. I just think it's not to my liking. So not a technical problem, but
So does it taste unfermented to you?
No, it doesn't taste wordy. It's like a almost a grassy raw grain character.
Huh?
Not quite raw, because I mean it's been malted, but I'll try it again.
Well, why are you doing that? One thing that I noticed. That was different from any other beer that I've brewed or that I remember, is when I went to dry hop, the protein was kind of, I guess, so thick in the Kreuzen that it was almost like, on top of a key lime pie or like a coconut cream pie.
Right.
You know, the Kreuzen was so thick that I tasted it to make sure that it was, you know, okay, and it tasted fine. And by the time that I kegged, it had fallen back in. And there was hardly any trube in the bottom of the bucket, you know, because I guess all the protein is still in
yeah,
the beer.
Solution. Yep.
But something you don't like.
Yeah, it's just not to my taste. I mean, it again, like I remember what he said and, went to his website and read all that. And I think this is what he wanted. You know, I think this is the goal. It's just not for me.
I was thinking you were going to like it because I like it quite a bit.
Well, there you go.
We're nothing but honest here on the show. well, shoot. Because I'm not getting that. I'm just curious. Why don't you run and get the other bottle? And do you mind? Just to make sure that it's not a bottle flaw.
Right. That's a good idea. Yeah, that both of these taste exactly the same.
Huh. Well, darn.
Well, I mean, the fact that they're both the same here means, yeah, it's not like a contamination problem or something. It's that's how the beer is.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you like it and Steve likes it and I don't, I'm wondering if it's one of those things like, you know, like cilantro, like some people like, oh, cilantro, that's good. And other people are like, ugh, it tastes like soap.
Yeah, it could be.
I wonder if there's a palate difference.
It could be.
Because otherwise, I mean, it's clearly, like I said, it's not contaminated or something like that. There's something in the flavor that's just off-putting to me.
Well, I sent samples today to Matt and Josh, the other recipe development participants. So,
sure.
So I'm not going to tell them, what your feedback was or Steve and my feedback was and just see what they think.
And then you can just erase the tape from the show. Nobody will ever be the wiser. Or just insert like a robot voice. This is great.
I'll edit clips from previous shows with you. This is great. I really love this. Hello, Smithers. I like when you turn me on. This is a very short first part of the show then, because we usually talk a little bit about, what we would do different or, just tweaking the recipe. But it sounds like you would rather boil the beer.
I mean, there's what IBUs were you shooting for?
30.
Does that 30 IBUs to you? It seems a little low.
I think it was 30. I think,
does it taste like a 30 IBU beer to you?
No, probably not. I mean, I think that it is adequately balanced. It's not as bitter as like an American pale ale. But again, you remember, I poured that hop tea on top of the mash.
Right.
And maybe if I had poured that hop tea like directly into the fermenter, you would certainly get a bigger bitter charge out of that. But
also the volume of hop tea boiled was fairly low.
Yeah.
So for that to bitter the whole batch, that would have had to have been like super, super bitter.
But to me, I've been drinking on it for a little while, but to me, the bitterness is... Like I say, it's not like American pale ale bitterness, but it's enough. Right. It's enough to balance the.
Yeah, it's balanced. It's decently. Yeah.
So shall we talk about a beer that may be more of your liking?
Sure.
I talked the other day to Casey up at Imperial, and. Mm-hmm. Just checking in, and I said, "Well, what should we brew next? It's springtime. What should we brew on this recipe development show?" And she said, "What about a Kolsch?" And I said, "Well, that sounds like a great idea." And so she sent me a packet of Dieter from Imperial, which is a Kolsch yeast, GO3 Dieter, and. So I was eating lunch with Steve yesterday before we shot video, and he said, I think what I'm going to brew next is something for springtime, something like a Kolsch. So I said, hey, you want to brew this Kolsch that Chris and I are going to formulate tomorrow? And he said, sure. So this is a beer for Steve to brew in absentia, and he's doing yard work today, or we would have had him on the show to chip in on the discussion, but he's open to brew whatever we set him to. So we could be really mean to him if we wanted to.
Hmm.
Let's have him do a raw Kolsch.
Raw Kolsch. There you go.
I swear I'm not crazy. I swear my taste buds are nuts, but it's interesting. Yeah, maybe it's genetic.
Just a matter of personal taste. Yeah. Wouldn't worry about it.
So tell us about Kolsch. What is it? Where does it come from?
Kolsch, it's a style from Cologne, Germany. And technically, for something to be labeled a Kolsch, it would have to be brewed within, Cologne, Germany. But, obviously brewers make, Kolsch style ales all the time. And anyway, it's just a light, balanced light or mid, it's roughly a 5% alcohol beer, pale, generally fairly dry, not very hoppy, like a balanced hoppiness in sort of European lager style, not as aggressive as like a German Pilsner, those tend to have a little bit more hops, but maybe a little more than a Helles. And so it's just a light, balanced beer. It was very popular with American brew pubs for a while, just because it was sort of like when people said, "What do you got that's like mud?" They could at least give them beer that was
in the color ballpark, you know, if not, you know, anything else, because it had actual flavor.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a Pilsner. I mean, it sounds a lot like, in reading descriptions on the, you know, the BJCP app, I mean, the descriptors, you know, they pretty much, it sounds like a Pilsner that's like brewed at a warmer temperature.
Yeah, that's not a bad description at all.
So why not just brew a Pilsner?
I guess if you're from Cologne, you might have some regional, you know, fondness for it. If you're an American homebrewer, you might not have the equipment to hold something at lager temperatures. Maybe just the slight differences in from Kolsch to Pilsner are to your liking, you know?
Yeah, the
variety is good.
The fermentation temperature for the Dieter recommended is 60 to 69 degrees Fahrenheit or 16 to 21 C.
Okay.
So it's described as, you know, clean, crisp, and low ester. So it sounds like, you know, Kolsch sounds kind of like a hybrid beer, you know, almost an ale, almost a Pilsner, kind of in the middle to me.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Or at least that's kind of, or I guess alt beer would be more of, what's the difference between like a Kolsch and an alt beer? Because an alt beer is brewed at warmer temperatures too, right?
Yeah. Alt beer is a little bit darker, has more sort of to the mid dark grain character to it. Maybe a little hoppier too.
Hmm. Okay. So is the ingredients list, is it going to be pretty simple for this beer?
The nice thing about Kolsch is you can make it completely simple by having your entire grain bill just be Pilsner malt. You know, you can, if you somehow feel the need to add something else, you could add a tiny amount, like 5% or less of carapils or something. But like, you don't need any color malts. Obviously you don't really need any, you know, cara or crystal malts, because you want it to ferment out to you know, reasonable amount of dryness. So yeah, straight Pilsner malt is just a wonderful and a simple base.
Hmm. Okay. So should we open the spreadsheet and just get to it?
Yeah.
And fix Steve up a beer?
Fix Steve up a beer.
Let's do a 5 gallon or 19 liter batch.
Okay.
And he doesn't have the capacity to lager yet, although he's talking about getting a kegerator. But the temperature, it's not hot here yet. So, you know, this would be good for, you know, like a guest bathroom or, you know, he doesn't have a basement, but it'd be good like for a basement to ferment in. Dark closet. A hole in the backyard. A cave. Any of these things. You could put it in your car with the air conditioning on. Probably wouldn't be practical. He does have a neighbor across the street who is German and brews a lot of German beers, so you know he could do a guest fermentation over there, though.
Right.
That'd be cheating, though.
Or at least get the guy to taste it afterwards. Yeah, I bought for five gallons, assuming his extract efficiency is 70%, 9 pounds of Pilsner malt would give you 12 Plato wort, which is 1048. And that's right in the ballpark where you want it.
Okay.
Because that gives us right around, let me see, 4.8% alcohol if it ferments out to the degree it should.
Okay.
It's right in the, you know, 5% beer is like, you know, beer and for most of the world.
And, Is there anything special that we need to do in the mash?
Here's the thing. In the old days, it probably would have been a decoction mash,
mm-hmm.
you know. But these days with modern malts, you know, no, Just and especially because you don't want it to be because you've got no care malts or nothing to build up the body that way, so you don't need to mash for like the just ultimate fermentability. You know, a nice normal mash, you know, I'd say like 150 to 152 Fahrenheit, that's gonna do fine, just a single infusion.
For 60 minutes.
Yeah, 60 to 90. You could, I mean, if you wanted it more, like a little drier, go to the slightly longer mash. But you know, really anything over 45 should do it.
Okay. And then for the boil, just a 60-minute boil, or depending on the gravity, I guess, that you achieve.
Yeah, depending on how much wort you collect and the gravity of that, but 60 to 90 minutes should do it. And then you're going to want one, just a single hop addition, bittering. There's no real late hopping in Kolsch's, or dry hopping or anything like that. Go for like noble hops, you know, like Hallertau or Tettnang or any of the noble hops, or even. You know, even if you just find something that's like neutral and doesn't have a strong, you know, weird or not weird, but you know, a strong, sort of noticeable, varietal characteristic, but you know, just something that smells like hops, and that's it.
Yeah, I texted Steve a while ago, and I said, because he said he had a bunch of hops, and I was like, do you want to use some of your surplus hops? And he said that he would use either Tettnang and or Satz.
Oh, there you
So,
go. Those are both excellent.
what's the IBU that he should, if he uses either of those, what's the target IBU?
Anywhere like right around 25. Now, I'd say really anything 22 to 28, but 25 is a number I used in my book when I.
Okay. And then fermenting at probably what's room temperature nowadays in, in an air-conditioned house in Arkansas. Again, the temperature range for Dieter is, 60 to 69 degrees. Well, that may be a little cooler than
Yeah, I'd go with that range, the 60 to 69. Yeah, I'd go dead center in the middle of that,
Okay.
and then he should, if he can, cold condition it for like at least a week, but probably preferably 2 or 3. And you know, if he can, drop it down into the low 50s.
He's got a bonus refrigerator, a
There we
beer
go.
fridge that he said that he can put either a keg or a a carboy in. So maybe he could, after primary fermentation, maybe he could rack into a secondary maybe, and just stick it in the fridge.
Yeah. One thing to look though, if you rack it to a secondary fermenter, you have to make sure that when you put the beer in the fridge to cool down, that the liquid in the airlock doesn't get sucked back into it. Yeah. But that's
Yeah,
not
because
hard to avoid. If you have the little U-shaped thing, just have a very little amount of liquid in it, because then it'll, when it starts getting sucked back out, then it just rolls back down to
right.
the bottom of the U.
Yeah, most of the time they have little fill lines on airlocks, or sometimes, at least on mine they do, the ones I have. So packaging, just normal. Nothing special about the level of carbonation.
Yeah, just pretty much straight up whatever the majority of craft beers and fizzy yellow lagers are right around 2.5 volumes of CO2 should be fine.
Awesome. It sounds like a super, super easy beer, which
Yeah.
I think is what he's looking for. Something that's easy to brew, easy to drink.
I'm going over to the home of a fellow home brewer in Austin for the Eclipse.
Oh, awesome.
We're supposedly going to get 2+ minutes of totality.
Excellent. Well, we're going to Hatfield, Arkansas, which is just southwest of Mena, and we're supposed to get a little more than 4 minutes.
Ooh. So,
yeah. Been planning this for a long time, ever since we saw the one in 2017. I said, I want to see another one. When can we see another one?
When's another one?
And then the next total one in the neighborhood is going to pass right over our house, and that's going to be in 21 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've got to eat my Wheaties and take take better care of myself if I want to see that one. All right. Well, have fun seeing the eclipse.
I hope to.
And maybe drink a good beer while you're over in Austin.
They have some there.
That's what I hear. That's what I've experienced. All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Many thanks to Chris. I swear I thought he'd like that raw ale. Steve and I certainly did. I don't think I'm crazy. I don't think, and I hope that Steve is not just saying, ooh, that's great, when he doesn't like it. But he's even off camera, he was like, man, that's good. Anyway, I've sent out samples to others for tasting, not because Chris didn't like it, but because I was going to anyway. And now I'm nervous about what they'll think. So, in other news, Steve reports that the Kolsch is already brewed and is cold conditioning in the secondary. So looking forward to tasting that. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.